Vanjakapatrubhyascha Kripasindhu Vaibhascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Lord Shiva has become angry. And when Lord Shiva becomes angry, he's capable of destroying the entire universe. Sometimes we may also embody the Shiva principle. That's the nature of anger. Someone becomes angry, they'll throw everything, destroy everything. I don't care. But we don't have the potency that Lord Shiva does. He can actually destroy the universe. This time, when Lord Shiva became angry and Sati emaluated, what's the proper word? Emaluate? Yes, immolate. Sati immolated herself. Thank you. Lord Shiva became furious, and he created from one of his hairs one powerful demon named Birbhadra. Bira means what? Powerful, power. And Bhadra, huh? But maybe it has an A, a long A, which could mean that it's powerful inauspiciousness in that sense. Which is it? You look. So Virbhadra destroyed, with the other followers of Lord Shiva, destroyed the entire sacrificial area. And he beheaded whom? Who did he? Whose head did he cut off? Daksha. And he pulled out Bhrigu's mustache and Pusha's teeth and Bhaga's eyes, and everyone was, everything was devastated, because when one is at a sacrifice, you know, the mood is supposed to be very auspicious, and suddenly everything is destroyed. So the demigods and the sages understood they had created a great mistake. A great offense had been committed to Lord Shiva. And they went to Lord Brahma, and then Lord Brahma brought all the demigods to Kailash, and there they saw Lord Shiva sitting completely free from anger underneath a great banyan tree and instructing Narada Muni and everyone, so many great sages, on the science of the Absolute Truth. So Brahma, in his own way, calling Lord Shiva the Supreme Lord, because actually Lord Shiva is none different from the Supreme Lord. He's the Lord, but not yet the same as the Lord. No longer, eh? So auspicious. Very auspicious. Everything that Lord Shiva does, because Lord Shiva means auspicious. So no longer, eh? So powerful auspiciousness. So Lord Brahma pacified Lord Shiva. He was explaining great personalities don't become angry, actually, and that when someone does something wrong, like Daksha did something wrong, it's not necessary for you to kill them. Practically their own bad activities kill them, because the material nature reciprocates through one's actions. This is called the law of karma. So if we act good in the world, good things happen to us. If we act badly, bad things happen to us. This isn't exactly Krishna doing it or God doing it, but this is the law of nature. But maya dakshena prakriti, see, This is going on under Krishna's direction. Actually, there's one realization of God that is described in the Bhagavad Gita, that is understanding that the universe is like an organism. And many of the contemporary New Age type of people, this is how they perceive the universe, as an organism. And it reciprocates. We are part of this organism in it. And as we act, it reciprocates with us. And it's true. On a certain level, this isn't the highest understanding, but it's a true understanding. The universe is like an organism. It's a unit, and it reciprocates. So, Brahma suggested to Lord Shiva that there is no need to become angry and punish Daksha, because he's already punished by the very nature of the reciprocation of the material energy. And practically speaking, there's that saying in English, when someone gets angry, you say, he lost it. Or, I lost my temper, or I lost my head. So Daksha actually did lose his temper and his head, figuratively and literally, ultimately. This was the reciprocation for his horrible deeds. So, after begging Lord Shiva to please restart the process of sacrifice, because the sacrifice was created by the Lord, the system of, because sacrifice is meant to appease the Lord. So who is actually the loser in one sense? The living entities are the losers, because this is the process of pleasing Krishna, sacrifice. And of course, as Prabhupada mentioned so many times during the purports, that sacrifice in this age means sankirtan jagya. Jagya means sacrifice. To chant Krishna's names congregationally. Yagyar sankirtanar prayer yajanti sumedasa. Those who are intelligent in this age of Kali, this is the sacrifice. They will partake in this sacrifice to please Krishna. They will gather together and congregationally chant Krishna's names and hear Krishna's glories. So hearing Lord Brahma's request, we've heard that, and today we'll begin. Lord Shiva replied very, very simply in text 2 through 5 of chapter 7. So in the first text, Maitreya Muni said, because again Maitreya is narrating this to Vidura, Lord Shiva, being thus pacified by the words of Lord Brahma, he spoke as follows in answer to Lord Brahma's request. Because Lord Brahma had requested him specifically to bring Daksha back to life, give Bhaga back his eyes, Bhrigu his mustache, Pushya his teeth. May the demigods and priests whose limbs have been broken by your soldiers recover from the injuries by your grace. You come and take the oblations that are meant for you in the sacrifice and let the sacrifice go on. That was Brahma's request. So, Lord Shiva replied in these 2, 3, 4, and 5, 4 verses. My dear Father Brahma, because it's interesting, because Lord Shiva was quite angry, but this is actually how he was thinking. My dear Father Brahma, I do not mind the offenses created by the demigods. Because these demigods are childish and less intelligent, I do not take a serious view of their offenses, and I have punished them only in order to right them, to correct them. So while appearing just to be an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, an insult for an insult, appearing to retaliate, Lord Shiva's mentality was actually not like that. He was trying to help, but he was doing it in his own inimical way. Prabhupada's purport. There are two types of punishment. One is that which a conqueror imposes on an enemy, and the other is like that of a father imposes on his son. There is a gulf of difference between these two kinds of punishment. Lord Shiva is by nature a Vaishnava, a great devotee, and his name in this connection is Ashutosha. He is always satisfied, and therefore he did not become angry as if he were an enemy. He is not inimical to any living entity, rather he always wishes the welfare of all. Whenever he chastises a person, it is just like a father's punishment of his son. Lord Shiva is like a father because he never takes seriously any offense by any living entity, especially the demigods. So his anger was on a different level, and his punishment was on a different level. Lord Shiva continued, because this was one of the requests that Daksha be brought back to life. But there was a problem. Birbhadra took the head of Daksha and he threw it as an oblation, as an offering, into the fire. And what happens when you throw things into the fire? They get burnt and they turn to ashes. So what would he put back as Lord Shiva's head? As Daksha's head to bring him back to life. So Lord Shiva said, since the head of Daksha has already been burnt to ashes, he will have the head of a goat. The demigod known as Bhaga will be able to see his share of sacrifice through the eyes of Mitra. The demigod Pushu will be able to chew only through the teeth of his disciples. And if alone, he will have to satisfy himself by eating dough made from chickpea flour. But the demigods who have agreed to give me my share of the sacrifices will recover from all their injuries. Interesting. So he followed Lord Brahma's request, but he did it in his own way. Sometimes when one does something wrong and apologizes, one gets forgiven, but still there has to be, or when one cuts, one makes a mistake or something and cuts oneself. And what is there left? A scar. And what is the benefit of that scar? When we look, we remember, oh, I've made this mistake, and therefore I shouldn't do it again. So Lord Shiva decided to leave some remnants, not just, he could have completely taken back everything, but he decided to allow something to continue. Prabhupada's purport. The demigod Pusha became dependent on his disciples for chewing. Otherwise, he was allowed to swallow only dough made of chickpea flour. Thus, his punishment continued. He could not use his teeth for eating, since he had laughed at Lord Shiva, deriding him by showing his teeth. In other words, it was not appropriate for him to have teeth, for he had used them against Lord Shiva. Those who have had their arms cut off will have to work with the arms of the Aswini Kumara, and those whose hands were cut off will have to do their work with the hands of Pusha. The priest will also have to act in that manner. As for Bhrigu, he will have the beard from the goat's head. The goatee. Because especially in India, a sign of one's masculinity is one's mooch, mustache. And every young boy, man, everyone has to have a mustache. This is basically the system. So he pulled off his mustache because he dared use his power against Lord Shiva, Bhrigu Muni, Brahminical Tejas. So he gave him back something, goti. Gave him the beard of a goat, which you see no one wearing. No one wears that as replacement of mustache. Not the same. So he had the beard of from the head of the goat's head. So Daksha got the head, but no goatee. From Prabhupada's purport. The real intelligence, mind, and consciousness are part of the particular individual soul. It will be found in the verses ahead that after Daksha's head was replaced by the goat's head, he was as intelligent as he had previously been. He prayed very nicely to satisfy Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, which is not possible for a goat to do. Therefore, it is definitely concluded that the brain substance is not the center of intelligence. It is the consciousness of a particular soul that works intelligently. The whole movement of Krishna consciousness is to purify the consciousness. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, to purify people's consciousness. Right? That implies that our consciousness is now not pure, it is impure. Impure means that there are things that do not belong within the consciousness. So to remove those are impurities. To remove everything that is not natural to the consciousness is the business of the Krishna consciousness movement. It doesn't matter what kind of brain one has, because if he simply transfers his consciousness from matter to Krishna, his life becomes successful. It is confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita that anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness achieves the highest perfection of life, regardless of whatever abominable condition of life he may have fallen into. Specifically, anyone in Krishna consciousness goes back to Godhead, back to home, on leaving his present material body. So it doesn't make a difference what our body is like, what capacity our intelligence is. Just what makes a difference to purify the consciousness is to somehow or another focus the consciousness, the mind, upon Krishna. So therefore Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto. Become my devotee and focus your consciousness upon me. So this is Lord Shiva's way of reconciling the fact that they needed punishment with the fact that they needed to be forgiven also. The great sage Maitreya said, "My dear Vidur, all the personalities present were very much satisfied and hardened soul upon hearing the words of Lord Shiva, who is the best amongst the benedictors." In this verse, Prabhupada's purport, Lord Shiva is described as Midustam, the best of the benedictors. He is also known as Asutosh, which indicates that he is very quickly satisfied and very quickly angered. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that less intelligent persons go to the demigods for material benedictions. In this connection, people generally go to Lord Shiva. And because he is always quickly satisfied and gives benediction to his devotees without consideration, he is called Midustama, or the best of the benedictors. Materialistic persons are always anxious to get material profit, but they are not serious about spiritual profit. Sometimes, of course, it so happens that Lord Shiva becomes the best benedictor in spiritual life. It is said that once a poor Brahmana worshipped Lord Shiva for a benediction, and Lord Shiva advised the devotee to go see Sanatan Goswami, who was living in Vrindavan at that time. The devotee went to Sanatan Goswami and informed him that Lord Shiva had advised him to seek out the best benediction from him, Sanatan. On the request of the poor Brahmana, Sanatan had a touchstone with him, which he kept within the garbage. A touchstone is some type of a gem, that anything that is touched to it turns into gold, and he kept it in the garbage. On the request of the poor Brahmana, Sanatan Goswami gave him the touchstone, and the Brahmana was very happy to have it. How could he get as much? He now could get as much gold as he desired simply by touching the touchstone to iron. But after he left Sanatan, he thought, if a touchstone is the best benediction, why has Sanatan kept it with the garbage? Sanatan Goswami then informed him, actually, this is not the best benediction, but are you prepared to take the best benediction from me? The Brahmana said, yes, sir, Lord Shiva has sent me to you for the best benediction. Then Sanatana Goswami asked him to throw the touchstone in the water nearby and then come back. The poor Brahmana did so, and when he returned, Sanatana Goswami initiated him with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Once I heard Prabhupada tell the story, and he said, and the way Prabhupada told it was, now, do you want the best benediction? Yes. Then throw away the stone. He threw away the stone. Now sit down and chant Hare Krishna. Thus, by the benediction of Lord Shiva, the Brahmana got the association of the best devotee of Lord Krishna, and was thus initiated in the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So everyone was satisfied with Lord Shiva's pronouncement, his benedictions. Thereafter, Bhrigu, the chief of the great sages, invited Lord Shiva to come to the sacrificial arena. They were going to continue the sacrifice. Thus the demigods, accompanied by the sages, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, all went to the place where the great sacrifice was being performed. After everything was executed exactly as directed by Lord Shiva, Daksha's body was joined to the head of the animal meant to be killed in the sacrifice. Prabhupada's short purport to this. So the goat's head was placed on Daksha. This time all the demigods and great sages were very careful not to irritate Lord Shiva. Why? Why were they very careful not to irritate Lord Shiva? Yeah, they really learned their lesson last time. Therefore, whatever he asked was done. It is specifically said here that Daksha's body was joined to the head of an animal, a goat. When the animal's head was fixed on the body of King Daksha, Daksha was immediately brought to consciousness. And as he awakened from sleep, the king saw Lord Shiva standing before him. Daksha saw Lord Shiva. Prabhupada's purport. The example given here is that Daksha got up as if he were awakened from deep sleep. In Sanskrit, this is called Supta Ivotastau. The meaning is that after a man awakens from sleep, he immediately remembers all the duties which he must execute. Daksha was killed and his head was taken away and burnt to ashes. His body was lying dead. But by the grace of Lord Shiva, as soon as the head of a goat was joined to the body, Daksha came back to consciousness again. This is the first head transplant done. This indicates that consciousness is also individual. Daksha actually took another body when he took on the head of a goat. But because consciousness is individual, his consciousness remained the same, although his bodily condition changed. Thus bodily construction has nothing to do with the development of consciousness. Consciousness is carried with the transmigration of the soul. There are many instances of this in Vedic history, such as the case of Maharaj Bharata. After quitting his body as a king, Maharaj Bharata was transferred to the body of a deer. But he retained the same consciousness. He knew that although formerly he was King Bharat, he had been transferred to the body of a deer because of his absorption and thinking of a deer at the time of his death. In spite of his having the body of a deer, however, his consciousness was as good as it was in the body of King Bharat. The arrangement by the king, by the Lord, is so nice that if a person's consciousness is turned into Krishna consciousness, there is no doubt that in his next life he will be a great devotee of Krishna, even if he is offered a different type of body. So Daksha was wearing the head of a goat, and he awakened and he saw Lord Shiva in front of him. At that time, when Daksha saw Lord Shiva, who rides upon a bull, his heart, which was polluted by envy of Lord Shiva, was immediately cleansed, just as the water in a lake is cleansed by autumn rains. Purport. Here is an example of why Lord Shiva is called auspicious. If anyone sees Lord Shiva with devotion and reverence, his heart is immediately cleansed. King Daksha was polluted by envy of Lord Shiva, and yet by seeing him with a little love and devotion, his heart immediately became cleansed. In the rainy season, the reservoirs of water become dirty and muddy, but as soon as the autumn rain comes, all the water immediately becomes clear and transparent. Similarly, although Daksha's heart was impure because of his having slandered Lord Shiva, for which he was severely punished, Daksha now came to consciousness, and just by seeing Lord Shiva with veneration and respect, he became immediately purified. Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter Sati, his eyes filled with tears, and in bereavement his voice choked up and he could not say anything. At this time, King Daksha, afflicted by love and affection, was very much awakened to his real senses. With great endeavor, he pacified his mind, checked his feelings, and with pure consciousness began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. King Daksha said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I committed a great offense against you. But you are so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you have done me a great favor by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified brahmanas. Why then should you neglect me, who am engaged in performing sacrifices?" We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport to this verse. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are affectionate even to imperfect brahmanas. Lord Shiva punished Daksha not as one does his enemy, rather he punished Daksha just to bring him to his senses. So that is actually the proper way to look at everything, negative as it may be, that happens to us. That somehow Krishna has awarded us this to help us, to bring us to our senses, to remind us of what the purpose of life is, and to remind us that we should fix our mind upon Him. Tateyanu kampam susamikshamano bhunjane vapma kripavabhakam ridvag vivapodam vidadano namaste. It means with the heart, the mind, the words, we should offer obeisances to Krishna when something happens to us. And then jivati om mukti palay siddhayabhak. Then one can go back to Godhead. Rather, he punished Daksha just to bring him to his senses so that he would know that he had done wrong. Daksha could understand this, and he acknowledged the great mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva towards the fallen brahmanas, including even himself. Although he was fallen, his vow was to execute the sacrifice, as is the duty of brahmanas, and thus he began his prayers to Lord Shiva. So in 14 and 15, he glorifies Lord Shiva. "My dear, great, and powerful Lord Shiva, you were created first from the mouth of Lord Brahma in order to protect the brahmanas in pursuing education, austerities, vows, and self-realization. As protector of the brahmanas, you always protect the regulative principles they follow, just as a cowherd boy keeps a stick in his hand to give protection to the cows. I do not know your full glories. For this reason, I did not know your full glories. For this reason, I threw arrows of sharp words at you in the open assembly. Although you did not take them into account, I was going down to hell because of my disobedience to you, who are the most respectable personality. But you took compassion upon me and saved me by awarding punishment. I request that you be pleased by your own mercy, since I cannot satisfy you by my words." We'll read some of the purports. We'll read halfway down through 14, and then we'll read the purport to 15. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is confirmed that even though one performs the rituals of the Vedas, if he does not develop a sense of Krishna consciousness, then all his labor in performing Vedic rituals is considered to be simply a waste of time. Because Daksha was so expert in performing sacrifices, But he thought the purpose of the sacrifice was what? To gain something fruitive, to gain some material from what he was doing. This is the tendency when one works. If one removes the gain, the material selfish gain from one's work, one loses the impetus to work, even. So the Vedas teach in such a way that one can satisfy one's material desires but yet become elevated. But Daksha did not know the actual purpose of the Vedas was the elevation, the Krishna consciousness, not the fruit of result. So if one does not develop a sense of Krishna consciousness, that all his labor in performing Vedic rituals is considered to be simply a waste of time. Lord Shiva's aim in destroying the Daksha Jagya was to punish Daksha, because by neglecting him, Lord Shiva, Daksha, was committing a great offense. Lord Shiva's punishment was just like that of a coward boy who keeps a stick to frighten his animals. It is commonly said that to give protection to animals, a stick is needed because the animals cannot reason and argue. Their reasoning and argument is argumentum ad baculum. Unless there is a rod, they do not obey. Force is required for the animalistic class of men, whereas those who are advanced are convinced by reason, arguments, and scriptural authority. Persons who are simply attached to Vedic rituals without further advancement of devotional service or Krishna consciousness are almost like animals. And Lord Shiva is in charge of giving them protection and sometimes punishing them, as he punished Daksha. And in the second purport. As usual, a devotee in an adverse condition of life accepts such a condition to be the mercy of the Lord. Factually, the insulting words used by Daksha against Lord Shiva were enough to have him thrown perpetually into a hellish life. But Lord Shiva, being kind toward him, awarded him punishment to neutralize the offense. King Daksha realized this, and feeling obliged for Lord Shiva's magnanimous behavior, wanted to show his gratitude. Sometimes a father punishes his child, and when the child has grown up and come to his senses, he understands that the father's punishment was not actually punishment, but mercy. Similarly, Daksha appreciated that the punishment offered to him by Lord Shiva was a manifestation of Lord Shiva's mercy. That is the symptom of a person making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness. It is said, this is so important, very easy to understand in one sense, but very hard to deeply execute. How to see everything, even the most adverse condition, as Krishna's mercy. It is said that a devotee in Krishna consciousness never takes any miserable condition of life to be a condemnation by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He accepts the miserable condition to be the grace of the Lord. He thinks, I would have been punished or put into a more dangerous condition of life due to my past misdeeds, but the Lord has protected me. Thus I have received only a little punishment as token execution of the law of karma. Thinking of His grace, Krishna's grace in that way, a devotee always surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead more and more seriously and is not disturbed by so-called punishment. So what does that surrender more and more seriously means? What does it mean? It means to place oneself more and more and more dependent upon Krishna and under His protection, and increase one's desire to please Krishna. To be determined to move closer to Krishna, accepting all things favorable for moving closer to Krishna, and rejecting things that are unfavorable, and having great faith that He is under Krishna's protection, and being meek, humble. This is the art of surrender. So for a devotee, everything that happens to him will bring him closer to Krishna. The great sage Maitreya said, thus being punished by Lord Shiva, King Daksha, with the permission of Lord Brahma, again began the performance of the Jagya along with the great learned sages, the priests and others. Thereafter, in order to resume the activities of sacrifice, the brahmanas first arranged to purify the sacrificial arena of the contamination caused by the touch of Birbhadra and the other ghostly followers of Lord Shiva. Then they arranged to offer the fire into the fire the oblation known as Purudhasha. This is interesting, and the purport will read that. So the sacrifice was again begun. Lord Shiva's followers and devotees, headed by Birbhadra, are known as Viras, or they are ghostly demons. So this Vira, this is what this Vira means. Virabhadra, ghostly demons. Not only did they pollute the entire sacrificial arena by their very presence, but they disturbed the whole situation by passing stool and urine. Therefore, the infection they had created was to be first purified by the method of offering Purudasha oblations. A Vishnu Jagya, or an offering to Lord Vishnu, cannot be performed uncleanly. To offer anything in an unclean state is called Sevaparad. The worship of the Vishnu deity in the temple is also Vishnu Jagya. In all Vishnu temples, therefore, the priest who takes care of the Archana Vidhi, the deity worship, must be very clean. Everything should be always kept neat and clean, and the foodstuff should be prepared in a neat and clean manner. All these regulative principles are described in the Nectar of Devotion. There are 32 kinds of offenses in discharging Archana service. It is required, therefore, that one be extremely clean, careful not to be unclean. So the two most important principles in worshipping the deity are cleanliness and punctuality, to be on time. It is required, therefore, that one be extremely careful not to be unclean. Generally, whenever any ritualistic ceremony is begun, the holy name of Lord Vishnu is first chanted in order to purify the situation. Whether one is in a pure or impure condition, internally or externally, if one chants or even remembers the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, one immediately becomes purified. So this is the great key to purification, to always chant Krishna's names. Regardless if the situation is superficially or actually pure or impure, to just chant. The Jagya area was desecrated by the presence of Lord Shiva's followers, headed by Birbhadra, and therefore the entire arena had to be sanctified. Although Lord Shiva was present and he is all auspicious, it was still necessary to sanctify the place because the followers had broken into the arena and committed so many obnoxious acts. That sanctification was possible only by chanting the holy name of Vishnu, Tri Kapala, which can sanctify the three worlds. In other words, it is admitted herein that the followers of Lord Shiva are generally unclean. They are not even very hygienic, they do not take bath regularly, and they wear long hair and they smoke ganja. Persons of such irregular habits are counted amongst the ghosts. Since they were present in the sacrificial arena, the atmosphere became polluted and it had to be sanctified by Tri Kapala oblations, which indicate the invocation of Lord Vishnu's favor. Maitreya said to Vidura, "My dear Vidura, as soon as King Daksha offered the clarified butter, so the situation was purified, and Daksha took the ghee and offered it to the fire with the mantras from the Yajurveda in sanctified meditation, then immediately Lord Vishnu appeared there in his original form as Narayan." Immediately Lord Vishnu appeared. Lord Vishnu is all-pervading. Any devotee who, in sanctified meditation, follows the regulative principles, chants the required mantras in service, and in a devotional mood, can see Vishnu. It is said in the Brahma Samhita that a devotee whose eyes are anointed with the ointment of Godhead can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead always within his heart. Lord Shyamasunda is so kind to his devotees. So now there are two two prayers that Daksha offered Lord Shiva, and we'll read those, and that will be, and we'll stop there. Excuse me, offered Lord Narayan, because Lord Narayan immediately came. Lord Narayan was seated on the shoulder of Stotra, or Garuda, who had big wings. As soon as the Lord appeared, all directions were illuminated, diminishing the luster of Brahma and the other demigods. His complexion was blackish. This is the description, rather, of him. His garments, yellow, like gold. So Lord Shiva is such a great and powerful personality, but here is the description of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. His garments, yellow like gold, and his helmet was as dazzling as the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black bees, and his face was decorated with earrings. His eight hands held a conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, arrow, bow, shield, and sword, and they were decorated with golden ornaments such as bangles and bracelets. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree, beautifully decorated with various kinds of flowers. Prabhupada says in the purport that the Lord appears just as the morning sun arises to protect the universal creation. Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and a garland was situated upon his chest. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude which would captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Fans of white hair, chamaras, appeared on both sides of the Lord like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon. As soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the Gandharvas and all present there, immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead had appeared, and even Lord Shiva bowed down. Brahma, everyone immediately bowed down. When Daksha came, his effulgence was something, but Lord Shiva, this was in the beginning of the sacrifice, Lord Shiva did not stand up, and neither did Lord Brahma. But Lord Vishnu's effulgence is something completely different. And even Lord Shiva himself bowed down. Not only did he stand up, he bowed down. In the presence of the glaring effulgence of the bodily luster of Narada, of Narayan, excuse me, everyone else's luster faded away, and everyone stopped speaking, fearful with awe and veneration. All present touched their hands to their heads and prepared to offer their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like that. Adhok Shaja. Okay. Stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Was that a question or a comment? Or neither? You are touching your hand to your head in preparation to offer your prayers. Okay. Then we'll stop for the night, and tomorrow Krishna Vans will continue. Now each of the demigods, and Daksha, beginning with Daksha, will begin to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.